money coming from Salka. And then I see demarcation board with us and other stakeholders. Can we start with our meeting? I want to change the agenda. Adoption of the customer initiation bill would put it after KZN report. Then we'll start with Salka input. KZN, Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. Anyone from KZN? Okay. Because the adoption of the bill really won't take us long. We have dealt with this bill for some time. We have agreed already on the bill. What we wanted, Dr. Bester, is just to ensure that everything that we have agreed on is on the bill. The bill is paid on. And then we'll go to the demarcation board and have some discussion there. Salka leadership is here. We should then start with Salka, go to KZN. Okay. Demarcation board to then follow us after we have adopted the customer initiation team. Can we have it that way? Agenda accepted as amended. Can we move to Salka? Can, of course, Salka has been always visiting us here at the part and part of the meeting, but always for purposes of record introduction, which has been necessary. Can I give it to you?
Thank you, Chair. My name is Charles Bekumzi Stofile. I am the National Executive Committee member of South African Local Government Association, responsible for governance, IGR, and councillor empowerment. I'm with Councillor Janda, who is the chair of the governance, IGR, and councillor empowerment, and Sonwabo Kaike, who is an official of SALCA. If I should, with your permission, Chair, Councillor Janda will walk us through on the presentation, and I must say that we have been involved and engaged with the Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs Department over the last couple of years pertaining to the Municipal Structures Act and matters of demarcation and matters of elections and its impact to our communities. Without boring you, and then I will hand over to Councillor Janda just to walk us through on the few slides that we have prepared for this session.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. And good morning to you, to the members, and to everybody who's here. As indicated, my name is Samkelo Janda, here representing Salka. As Chair Ustofile has indicated, we have had some engagements with the department. Here now today we want to indicate the areas where we feel that we really support the proposals in the amendment bill, and as well indicate in some areas where we would want to have a little bit of some elaboration. I hope that everybody has a copy of the presentation from Salka. Unfortunately, there are no numbers in terms of the pages. Oh, there are, yes. Now, I will skip the introduction because Dr. Stofile has already dealt with that. I will quickly get into the proposed amendment. There is an insertion of a new definition for declared elected, deletion of the definition of the district management area, the substitution of the definition election, and insertion of the whip. We want to indicate that at SALGA, we resolve that we are in full agreement that the issue of the district management area should be deleted and substituted, because this was during the times of the transition phase in the establishment of the new democratic phase of the local government, and these district management areas are no longer existing, and therefore we really support the deletion of that part. And then the insertion in the definition as well of the whip of council or the chief whip, as indicated in the amendment, we support that because it's something new, but in terms of the practice, it is what we are already seeing happening in terms of the practice in local government. Another proposed amendment in terms of page 4 is the deletion of section 6 and section 89, which refers to the very issues that I indicated earlier on, referring to the district management area. So in the Act, all issues that relate to the district management area, we support the deletion of those sections. Coming to page 5, Chair, the deletion of section 7 with the subsequent sections that are following, which refers to the types of municipalities. There's another type of a municipality which is called the plenary type of a municipality, which in the majority of cases is referring to the small municipalities or municipalities with a small number of councillors. As SALGA, we support the deletion of section 7C, 9E, 9F, 10C as it relates to the plenary type. We also have the further proposals for consideration in terms of those of that deletion. That in the light of the broader implementation implications, it may be necessary for these amendments to only come into effect with the next local government elections. Because if, let's say for argument's sake, the bill becomes a law within this term of office of council, it would cause a lot of disruptions in the system. Because there are subsequent sections that are even indicating the number. If you delete this one, the number that we is proposed, which would then require probably to go to elections, because that is how you get the councillors who participate in councils. So that is why we are saying, if the amendment goes through, but in terms of the implementation, it would have to be implemented and effected after the elections in come 2021. Plenary type municipalities are general small municipalities with small number of councillors, where having an executive or the, and mayoral type may not be feasible. But what we are proposing here is that it should follow the combined I mean, sort of the collective executive type of a municipality with the ward participatory system. So if you follow those types, that is what we would be recommending for this new type of, in fact, linking up to the already existing type of a municipality. The clear proposal, there is a clear link between the proposed amendment with a framework of the recognition of full-time and part-time councillors. The policy framework should likewise be subjected to review. This talks to the issue, for instance, where there are the MEC, when the council has taken a resolution in terms of designating particular councillors to serve on the executives, then it would then require that the same process be followed in terms of reviewing that process as it relates to the plenary type of municipality. The deletion of section 12, which places an obligation to the MEC to write to the organized local government and affected municipalities at the commencement of the process to establish municipalities. SALGA's view is that these two sessions, they should remain as they are, because there was a proposal that one should be deleted as it was viewed as if there is a duplication in the two sections. But the view of SALGA is that these sections should remain as they are, so that the responsibility of the MEC in terms of consulting SALGA as an organized association of municipalities is not left behind. And as well, that if the it also obliges the MEC, as outlined in section 12.4 and section 16A, you may see them as different, but when we look at it as SALGA, we see them as an integral part of the process. And if one is deleted, it will, to our view, affect the other, because you have to give the notice, and when you are going to publicize, we feel that SALGA should as well be consulted, so that we are able to see and advise accordingly our member municipalities. So that is why we feel strongly that we need to retain those sections of the Act. With Section 20 of the Act, we also propose that it should be amended to give the minimum of 15 councillors instead of what is currently contained in the Act, where it is talking of a minimum of 3. We support the deviation by 20%, but what we are also supporting is that the number should be increased from that 3 as a minimum to 15. The reason why we are looking into the number of 15 is that we would want to encourage and enhance the issue of governance in municipalities. Because with a limited number, it becomes very difficult for councillors to participate in various committees that should be there in municipalities. And especially when you are also talking about strengthening the issue of oversight that has to be played by municipalities over the executive and administration of these municipalities. So the small number of those councillors make it very difficult in municipalities to be able to exercise that mandate. So therefore, SALGA we say in the light of the broader implementation, the implication as well, it might be necessary that these amendments come into effect again with the next local government elections. And of course, we are also cognizant of the fact that there would be financial implications for the municipality. The other amendment which is proposed in the amendment bill is the one that talks to a cooling off period for a person who has been dismissed by the MEC in terms of the code of conduct. And we support the proposal which is coming up in the amendment, so that if one has been found guilty in terms of whatever he has transgressed in terms of the code of conduct, at least you give time for, as part of the consequences for whatever transgressions that might have happened. So you allow that time. Unfortunately, the Constitution also allows that that can be inserted in terms of the national legislation. So we agree with that proposal as indicated here. Section 22 of the Act, which provides clarity with regards to the date of the assumption of the elected councillors. In the practice and in the implementation of the legislation since coming into effect from 1998 up to now, we have seen a different interpretation by municipalities in terms of when a councillor becomes a councillor. That is why we say we support this amendment that talks and specifies who then becomes an elected councillor. And there are a number of case laws where municipalities have been taken to court, others resisting the assumption of a councillor into the office. So we support that there has to be that clarification in terms of the elected councillor. Now, there is also, in terms of page 10, the issue where we were talking about the district management areas, where we have said we are in support of the deletion of that part. But in that amendment, we also propose an addition in terms of law section 23, which essentially gives effect to the definition that I've already spoken to of a declared elected as proposed. Because if you look into that section in the Act, it will talk about the DMAs and talk about a councillor, but we say we must insert to be consistent with what we have just illustrated above. Now, in terms of section 12, which talks to the by-elections, which is on slide or page 11, we say currently, in terms of section 25.1A of the Act, a by-election must be held if IEC, a by-election must be held if the IEC does not declare the result of the election of the Municipal Council within the period specified in the Act. And with the amendment which is being proposed, that there has to be a specific time which should be inserted in the Act, so that if that time expires, then there should be another process that would follow. So which we are we agree with the 7 days as proposed. That should the IEC not declare the result within that 7 day period, the amendment provides for the IEC with a recourse to apply to the Electoral Act. So We are in agreement with that. The amendment also inserts a new section 2A, which requires the municipal manager to inform the MEC for local government and the IEC for a vacancy in a ward within 14 days. So to elaborate again on the time frame that should be given. So the MEC for local government in the province is also required, after consulting IEC, to call and set a date for the by-election. The amendment also provides for the cessation of by-elections to 9 months in all cases. Now, what we also want to stress is that it should be located, this matter here, bylaws, only to the level of the MEC, not to be escalated to that level. But he may consult with, the requirement is made for the consultation of with the minister when the MEC makes a decision with regards to that. So the SALGA is in support of such a proposal as indicated. Now, the section 13 of the amendment, what is proposed in the amendment is the insertion of a code of conduct as Schedule 7 to the Act. We would remember that earlier on it was on the Municipal Structures Act, and then it was migrated to the Systems Act. Now we are in full agreement that now the schedule should go to the new amendment. So we agree to that. Now the amendment makes reference to the definition of authorized representative. Now this one talks to the election, when there is an election, when who should be authorized to give the names of the parties into the electoral processes, and we say there has to be an official who is authorized, or a representative that has to be given that mandate by the party. Section 14, meetings of the council. The amendment seeks to insert the new section, subsection 1A, which authorizes the MEC for local government in the province to designate a person to call or chair the council. The problem as it relates with section 29 of the Act currently is that it empowers the speaker, it empowers the municipal manager to convene that first meeting after the elections because there is no speaker. Again, it gives the council members in majority to also petition the speaker if the speaker doesn't want to convene the meeting. Now there is a gap that in the event during the term there is a conflict organized, there's resistance between either the speaker or the municipal manager to convene the council meeting. There is no provision in terms of the Structures Act as to who should be given that authority to ensure that at least the meeting is convened. And we agree with the proposal that the MEC should intervene to designate an official who will just ensure that the meeting is convened so that then the processes would follow. So as SALGA, we support that proposal. Section 19 of the Systems Act relates to the notices that have to be given when convening the meetings, as we alluded to in terms of Section 29 of the Structures Act, and we say we support that proposal, that it has to be explicit to also talk even to other meetings that would be convened by council. Now, Section 16, which talks to quorums and decisions, Chair, we are also in support of the proposed amendment, because this talks to the issue of the deliberate vote, which was given to the Speaker of the Council. So, but now, in terms of the case laws that we have seen, we are in support that this needs to be amended, so that it is able to explain explicitly what is it that needs to be done. So we are in support of that proposal. Again, Section 17, we are also in support of the proposal. Section 18, the functions of the Speaker, even there we are also in support of those additions to the functions of the Speaker in terms of Section 37 of the Structures Act, because this is what you may have, you may even refer currently as the one of the inherent powers that speakers are dealing with. So, but now we say let it be in the Structures Act itself that the speaker is given those functions. The issue of Section 19, as proposed, we are also in agreement that those as listed there, the election of the whip of council, the function, the term, the vacation, removal, should be inserted into the new amendment, because currently there's a practice where municipalities have this kind of office which is not derived in any legislation. So we are in support of this kind of proposal. Now, but having said so, we want also in the policy frameworks that are being used, there is something that makes reference to a number of councillors that you would need to have for you to be able to have the whip of council. And we are saying this would require to be looked at in relation to this provision, so that you do not have this requirement of the number. Because when we look into it in terms of governance, again, this office plays a very major role in terms of managing relations in councils, whether it is to interact with political parties, interact with the executive, interact with the legislature. So if you want to have a stable institutions, we feel that it will be important that we have the whips in all municipalities. Now, in terms of the composition of the executive committees, BOGA Section 20 of the Act, what we not as SALGA we have noticed is that there is no consistency in terms of the composition of the executive committees. That is that type of a municipality which is called the collective executive type. So there is no consistency in terms of how the opposition parties participate in those executives. And we say it would be important that that is given as a responsibility to political parties who would then, in terms of their authorized representative, indicate to councils who will be sitting in the executive. So we are in agreement with that proposal as indicated here. Now, Section 21, the functions and powers of the EXCO, as entailed in Section 44 of the Act, when you read that section, you will find out that reports that the executive committee is expected to report on, they said all council committees, and we are trying to make a distinction here, and we agree with the proposed amendment, that it should only be those reports that relate to Section 80, because those committees are the committees that assist the collective executive committee. Other committees, in terms of Section 79, are the committees that are appointed by council itself, and therefore the lines of accountability should be going to e-council. So what we agree with this distinction which is being made here, and that also relates to Section 56, which talks to the executive mayors in terms of Section 56. We agree that they should be located in terms of reporting to the committees that assist them in their operations. Now, the Section 23, which talks to the proposed amendments on the establishment of ward committees, we support the proposed amendment with the following proposals for consideration. The insertion of subsection 1 should read, if a metropolitan or local council is unable to establish a ward committee or ward committees in accordance with subsection 1, the speaker must, prior to the expiry of 120 days after the election, in writing and on good cause shown, request the MEC. So if after the elections and this 120 days which is being proposed, which we agree that should be inserted, but if in terms of the environment and the conditions in the municipality it becomes clear that they will not be able to meet 120 days, a notice should be, I mean, the MEC should be requested to extend the period, which is 120. And we are also expecting, if that request has been made to the MEC, that the MEC should respond within 14 days to indicate whether he is granting that extension or not. And we say that should only be referring to the MEC, not to the, at least be escalated to the level of the minister. Section 24, which is proposed as a new amendment, which should talk to the Municipal Public Accounts Committee. So SALGA supports the proposed amendment. But one other thing that we were also looking at was that there seemed to be too much detail in terms of the proposal that is being taken here. Our view is that it is good that we have an indication and an insertion in the Act, but the detail should go to the regulations rather, but here be able to indicate the key issues that you would want to see in the establishment of the MPEX. So that you promote the issue of accountability, the oversight that you want to deal with. Now, Section 25, participation in municipal council, we support that amendment. And Section 85.4, here it deals with the issues of the Municipal Demarcation Board. And we say for a demarcation board to be able to deal with all issues that relate to it holistically, it would be important that this matter be taken out of the Structures Act and be referred to a demarcation board. So we agree with that proposal as indicated here. Schedule 1 of the Act, dealing with excessive seats, insufficient party list, and filling of vacancies. There's a whole range of issues which I think IEC would cover in their presentation. But what is important for us is that what is being indicated in terms of the amendments. We are in full agreement of those issues as indicated in terms of those schedule, in terms of Schedule 1 that relate to the IEC issues. I think, if I'm not mistaken, that's the end of the presentation, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, Councillor Chan. Councillor Stofield, any issue that you want to raise?
No, we'll take questions.
We'll take questions. Colleagues, can I invite members then to put questions if they need to do so? Honorable Mellon.
Chair, just before we do questions, I just need a clarity on something here. And that is that we haven't been briefed on this bill by the department yet. So from a process perspective, we're basically discussing amendments to the bill or public inputs to the bill without knowing the department's position and why they have done things the way they have. So with the greatest of respect, I really think that we need to have the department's input before we can start asking questions and taking the discussions from various role players further.
Any other person want to comment?
Okay, I think it's proper because we should follow the same rules that we follow with other.
No, Mato. I know when it has taken a little bit a long time. But you'll recall that on the 19th of May, I know that is almost 6 months down the line maybe, but 19th of May we're briefed. And then in details about what is the intended issues. And I thought in that meeting also we raised one issue, that if there are fundamental amendments by the department, we should deal with amendments after election, precisely because you won't have sufficient time to deal with detailed amendments from now until the deadline of this is February next year. So by March, they must meet the deadline that was set by the court. And then that's an issue that we raise with them, that we should be careful that if we give detail amendment, the problem is that the department won't meet the deadline. They won't meet the deadline, then if they don't meet the deadline, then they will see the department how to deal with that one. But on the 19th of May, we were briefed by DCOC in detail about what were the issues there. Did you?
Thanks, Chairperson, and good morning, members, as well. I think there are two pieces of legislation. Maybe there might be a bit of confusion. But Chair, one of the reasons why we came here is to also brief the committee on the structures, the Structures Act. So, as the members outlined, we can brief the committee thoroughly on the Structures Act. As far as the Municipal Systems Act, I think that's what the Chair is referring to.
Yeah.
That is the Systems Act. So that the foreseen is as he has outlined, but this is not the Structures Act, and we could thoroughly brief the committee now, because we are ready for that. And if it pleases the House.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you for the input from the DG, because that's exactly my understanding as well, was that in May we had, and it was a brief overview of all the upcoming legislation. It wasn't a detailed analysis of the legislation itself. It was this one and this one and this one and this one. There were three or four bills that the department was considering at the time. As I recall, it was a couple of slides on each bill. I could be wrong, but I seem to recall a couple of slides. I don't recall us going through the legislation in detail. I have no recollection of that whatsoever. That's the first thing. The second is that it was the Systems Act that was discussed, not the Structures Act. Now we're dealing with the structure. In fact, I think it was the Local Government General Laws Amendment that we spoke about in May. And now we're talking specifically about the Structures Act. I do believe that it is necessary, in order to do this due diligence, that we be briefed by the Department on this piece of legislation in detail so that we can go through it, and then we can engage with SELGA, and then we can engage with the other role players and say, right, this particular clause here, your opinion is this, the Department's opinion is that. How do we reconcile it? But what we're trying to do here is bulldoze this legislation through without proper consideration. And I think it's going to open this up to further constitutional review down the line. Thank you.
Dube?
Yeah, Chair, going forward, can I propose that we meet first with the Department, not today. We reschedule the date where we meet with the Department. The Department brief us thereafter, at least we have an idea what is it that we can do with the proposal of the SALCA. I think if they can go in that way, that can be okay.
Honorable
Wesley.
Thank you very much,
Chair.
Honorable Chairperson. In the spirit of the proposal that is being made, for the first time I'll second Mr. Dube. I'm seconding him. Thank you.
For the first time. Okay. No, I think members will agree two things. We'll finalize the SALCA one. We have started with it. There's no harm. SALCA will conclude, and then the Department will take the point, and then we'll continue with other presentation. It's very clear that I thought it was Naidu who did that on the 19th. Was it not you?
Yeah.
It was you on the 19th who took us through in detail some of these issues. But there's no harm. It's a little bit long time. We'll agree with the approach on that. But that's how we did it anyway on the 19th. And but because members wouldn't, they can't recollect it, leave it like that, we'll move on to the next one. Let us engage with SALCA. Then we can come to the Department to do something.
We don't even have a copy of the draft bill.
I saw the copy of the draft bill.
I don't have one here.
Your file is it. It seems the file is very poor. I thought copies were circulated last week. Yeah, honourable members, do you have a copy?
No.
I didn't know when that, Nila. Honorable Ngwezi, you have a bill now? No. Let me make it easy, colleagues, for all of you. May 19 is a little bit long. Long time ago, you must reflect your mind on some of the issues. We'll allow the Department to do so. But I think what we should do is to go to initiation bill. Mama Lulera, do you have a copy of the Structures Act? Is that the one? Can we just to allow members again enough time to relook at it?
let us go to customary initiation bill. Do you have the copies for it?
The fact that, Chair, we are noting this, we are giving us time to reconsider and look at it. Why don't we, it's just a proposal, Chair, that let's, why don't we deal with the KZN as well so that they present while we still got fresh mind on the first one that has been presented, and then link the two documents and put it aside. We are not going to engage on it as well. Then we start to engage on the initiation bill. That one is for us. We will adopt it. The members have already agreed on adoption of the bill.
Okay. I think also the demarcation board is here to make a presentation. Who else is here to make a presentation? Of course, SALCA, broadly speaking, it covers all local authorities. Okay. I think we can do so because I shall make some copies for colleagues who don't have a department of video on that. Can we request? KZN makes presentation and the demarcation board, and then we ensure that we do it.
Is it this one?
Baba Masis, when I feel the presentation?
Yes.
Okay, right now.
Yes, sir.
I know may good dialogue on May Masis. Then we must think about that. We must think about that. That will occupy. Okay. Can we move through our professor?
You're all right.
Yeah, have you arrived?
You're all right.
I pray that we are with you in SDMA. Okay, KZN, you want to take us through what is your proposal? I think proposal that circulated to one member.
Yes,
sir. And where do you have the KZN proposal?
Yes, I do.
You do, okay. It must help us on that ever
since. They must come with that. They think it's saying something.
About you coming. KZN want to make presentation from the West.
Honorable Chairperson and honorable members, colleagues and guests. My name is Stello Duma, from the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs in KZN. I'm with Zakele Majozi, my colleague. Chair, our presentation will be brief because most of the amendments in the proposed bill were in any event submitted by us as the province. But we still have a few areas that we want to highlight for consideration, Chairperson. As I said, I'm going to be quick on the first one is in relation to the minimum number of councillors, where we are a little bit concerned, Chairperson, in the sense that as the province with the most municipalities, we have about 54 municipalities, of which at the moment, about 6 municipalities have less than 15 councillors. If you increase the minimum threshold to 15, that will have the effect of automatically increasing the number of councillors in these municipalities by up to 21 councillors in total. And as Chairperson, you would know, that has cost implications for these small municipalities. We would be comfortable with a threshold of 9 councillors as a minimum. That's the first issue, Chairperson. The second issue is that of the deviation, which seems to suggest that the criteria for deviation will now be the municipal size of 20,000 square kilometers, which in our case we don't have a municipality of that size, but the entire province is, I think it's about 94,000 square kilometers. If that is approved as it is, we think that, we may be wrong, but we think that it will limit us in particular as a province, because that criteria doesn't necessarily apply to us, so we propose that that be reviewed. The next issue, Chairperson, relates to the Section 27E, where we're just saying that that particular section should be extended slightly to include an expression that says in terms of item 23 of Schedule 2 to this Act. We say this particularly because we've had practical experiences where local municipalities would recall councillors that are elected to the district thinking that they can restart an election, whereas in actual fact that is not what the law says, and that creates unnecessary confusion. Chair, we are also indicating that clause 15 of the bill, where it deals with public notices, should include meetings of committees of council. It must indicate that those meetings must be open to the public. At the moment, it doesn't. Chair, furthermore, something that is not necessarily included in the bill, but that we feel is necessary. Section 34 of the current Act, 34.4 to be specific, seems to empower the MEC to dissolve the Municipal Council in line with the requirements of Section 139. We feel that that is no longer necessary, it's actually redundant and should be deleted, Chairperson, Section 34.4 in particular. Chairperson, Clause 18 of the bill is supported, but we think that it should include a specific reference to the Speaker as being responsible for community or public participation function. In practice, at least in our province, that is what is happening. The Speaker's office is responsible, but it's not provided for in express terms in the legislation. The next one, Chairperson, talks to the amendment to Section 70 or the new Section 79 A, which in terms of the document, I think it's on page 9 of the bill, of the proposed bill, section 24. We think it should be extended slightly to include the fact that MPEC should exercise oversight over the executive and the administration of the municipality. The next item, Chairperson, is H on our submission. We think that item 17A, which is on page 11 of the proposed bill, should Chairperson be amended slightly in order to allow for the MEC to inform the chief electoral officer of a vacancy within 14 days if the municipal manager does not do so. At the moment it says the municipal manager must inform, but what if the municipal manager does not do so? And in practical terms, we have had such cases where the municipal manager simply does not inform the electoral commission of the existence of a vacancy. We also agree with the amendment. In fact, we sponsored the amendment that says that the a party may not supplement or change its list from the date of closure of the nomination until the municipal council is declared elected. But subsequently, we've discussed the matter and we feel that it should be until the municipal council holds its first council meeting or a day after the first council meeting. This is has been problematic, especially after the 2016 local government election, where in the case of Ngqutu, for instance, which was in the media, Ngqutu municipality, a party, which I will not divulge, Chairperson, changed a councillor on the day of the meeting. In fact, the councillor was already sitting in the meeting because they felt that he was going to vote in a particular direction, so they changed that person, which caused confusion and problems. So we think that if the law says until a day after the first council meeting, that will assist a lot, Chairperson. It is also suggested, Chairperson, I'm going to skip J, it's redundant. K, in my submission, it is suggested that, okay, so K is actually the same suggestion as in I, so I'm going to skip that again. L, in our submission, we are suggesting, Chairperson, that the word intervention, if you look at page of the proposed bill, I think it's page, this is now the code of conduct for councillors. It's on page 16 of the proposed bill. The title of Article 12 in the Code of Conduct says intervention in administration, when in actual fact we are talking about interference. The body or the substance in item 12 refers to interference, whereas the title talks about intervention, and we think that that may cause confusion, because when we talk intervention, it's mainly in terms of Section 139 of the Constitution. The next item on the same page, page 16, the title says council property. We think that that should be changed to municipal property, not council property, because there's a difference between the municipality and the council. And what is being referred to in actual fact is municipal property, not council property. Furthermore, Chairperson, we suggest that on page 17, Article 15 of the Code, which deals with breaches of the Code, if you look at 15.3, we think that there should be a time frame inserted at the end of that particular clause. So the Speaker must report the outcome of the investigation to the MEC for local government in the province concerned within, we're saying within 14 days after the investigation. Again, this comes from practical experience where the Speaker will investigate but they don't report anything for months on end. It becomes problematic. Still on page 17 of the proposed bill, still on Article 15, we think that a article should be inserted, 15.5, that should say, if the Speaker of the Council is the alleged perpetrator or the speaker to refuses to authorize an investigation, the council must establish a special committee as contemplated in item 16B of the code. Again, this is to guard against speakers. We have a particular case at the moment where the speaker is the alleged perpetrator, but they are not subjected to the code, to the provisions of the code, because they are the ones who should be initiating such investigation. Chair, in short, those are our submissions. We apologize that we have given you a document that is unsigned. That was because the MSC and the HOD were traveling, so we couldn't get them to sign. We will, subsequent to this meeting, get it signed and submit it to the committee. And we will, Chairperson, I promise, we will title the name of the committee correctly. At the moment, we said select committee. That's because we deal with the NCOP select committee a lot, so we will correct that, Chairperson. Thank you.
Okay, so thank you very much for the presentation. It's very helpful. And I think the team is taking note in areas where you are proposing. Honorable Chairperson.
It also, thanks for the good presentation, Chair, but it also assists, you know, where you propose the amendment, even if you change the font so that it's easy to follow your document. Change the font, this is proposed, this is must be deleted, you know, italic or other bold or whatever, but it makes easily to follow your deletion. It will hear you propose this and that. Maybe we will appreciate that in the future.
Okay. Well, I think the team, they will do that. It also will be easy to follow it and also to read and know what they are proposing as amendment. And then I think SAC also did well because it's very clear in their proposal. Is a proposal that is very clear. Then we can then do that. I think the demarcation board, we want us to make presentation. Anyone also from the Western Cape who's here? I saw there's a presentation by the Western Cape. He's not here. Or they just gave you offer. Demarcation board, take us through.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Ours will be a very short one. Just an apology from the chairperson. She's meeting with the representatives from Tlokwe, discussing the issues around the determination of the boundaries of Tlokwe and Venterstorp. Ours will be very short, chairperson. We recognize that prior the prior notice of the introduction and the summary of this particular bill was published in May 2016. And after that, there are quite a number of issues that we had raised with the department during the local government laws amendment bill. So our comments there will be based on that. So we have categorized our comments into those matters that are currently in the bill. Those matters that are not necessarily in this bill, but we discussed with the department in relation to those sections being migrated to the Demarcations Act, especially those that are relating to the mandate of the demarcation. Our view, Chairperson, is that the section that is dealing with the number of councillors from 3 to 15 warrant that the promulgation and the date of effect of this legislation be considered. The reason being that as the board we are expecting the minister to publish to publicize the formula for the number of councillors by April 2019, after which we need to deal with the ward delimitation processes. And our view is that if the date of effect is not clarified, there might be negative implication on ward public participation process. If suddenly municipalities who never qualified to have wards now have municipalities who should have those wards, and our time frame might warrant that, or if the minister gives the formula in April, and by that time we might not necessarily have determined the wards of those particular municipalities. So our view was that the promulgation and the date of effect be expedited before the ward delimitation starts, or delayed until after the next local government elections. The general point that we are putting forward to the committee, Honorable Chair, is that it would have been beneficial if this bill was considered simultaneously with the Demarcation Amendment Bill, to ensure that certain sections that are either deleted or repealed from this bill are either migrated to the demarcation board to avoid the gap that might result from the deletion or repealing of those sections. Now, if I go to the actual section that is talking about the number of councillors that may not necessarily be fewer than fewer than 50. As the board, we are supporting that particular one, but we are also cautioning on the implication of the ward delimitation for those municipalities that will be having the number of councillors having increased, because then it will mean that the number of wards will increase. And that section, in fact, we also agree with the department in that they deleted section 22.4, which in effect was nullified when the number of councillors was moved from 3 to 15. The next one, Chair, is relating to the repeal of section 89, which SALGA has indicated that they support. The board previously held an opinion that section 89 should be repealed. However, in view of the continuing discussion regarding the wall-to-wall municipality in the department and the issues around the two-tier system of local government, the MDB is of the view that we retain the section for now until the finality of those particular discussions. The last one in relation to what is in the current bill is the deletion of subsection 3 and 4 of section 85 of the Principal Act. We do support this particular amendment. However, we are saying that amendment is supported on condition that the whole of subsection 3, 4, and 5 are migrated to the Demarcation Act. In fact, in the draft bill of the Demarcation Act, those have been migrated there, but the challenge will be that in its current form, because the demarcation bill has not served in this committee, we might be creating a vacuum if those amendments are effected. But also lastly, we are saying that we don't need to delink subsection 3, 4, and 5, because subsection 5 talks about the MEC, if the MEC is not agreeing with the capacity assessment that has been done by the Demarcation Board. Now, if you delete subsection 3 and 4, then it might mean that the MEC will not be agreeing with what, because those are indicated in subsection 3 and 4. The last two comments, Chairperson, are relating to the matters that are not in the current bill, which in our view we discussed with the department during the local government amendment bill, that this needed to be migrated to the Demarcations Act. One is Section 2 of the Principal Act. Our view is that this is not being amended now. And the challenge of leaving this under Section 2 of the Structures Act will be that the Demarcation Amendment Bill, when the time comes that the Demarcation Bill is processed, then the Structures Act will require some amendment as well. I'll talk to the rationale of this too. The last one, Chair, relate to Schedule 1, Item 2, 3, 4, and 5. Those items are related to the issues of wards, and all of them in our discussion with the department were supposed to have been migrated to the Demarcations Act. So the reasoning that we have was that if this was happening parallel, then this was going to be easy for all the matters that relate to the demarcation board to be in one legislation. The rationale for this was that when we engaged with the department, was to ensure that all provisions that direct the work of the and mandate of the demarcation board are consolidated into a single legislation. Now, in conclusion, Chair, it is our view that the committee should consider matters around the promulgation and the date of effect for reasons that I've indicated earlier, and also the committee to consider that in terms of Section 85, the linking of subsection 3, 4, and 5 be considered, and the migration of all this subsection into the Municipal Demarcation Bill. And lastly, that the repeal of Section 89 be delayed until the discussion of the Architect of Local Government is finalized by the department. Thanks.
Thank you very much, CEO to the Demarcation Board. Any other person want to make some presentation? No other person. Malhan?
Chair, thank you. I have two questions or two comments that I'd like to put to the Demarcation Board. The first is the number of 15 councillors seems to be an arbitrary number. In other words, how did they arrive at the number that the minimum number is 15? They've gone from a minimum number of 3 councillors to a new minimum number of 15. If we look at the relevant section with regard to wards, municipalities that had less than 7 councillors do not qualify to have wards. So if we now want to create wards, surely then the minimum number should be 7, not 15. I'm just trying to understand, and maybe the department needs to come in on this, that if the purpose here is to introduce wards in every single municipality, instead of having a minimum of 15 councillors, our minimum number should be 7, which then addresses some of what KZN's concerns are about the financial implications. On that point, Chair, there has been no financial impact assessment on the municipalities conducted. In fact, the legislation in the memorandum to the bill says there are no financial impacts to municipalities, and I think that's disingenuous in the extreme, because if you suddenly jump from 3 councillors to 15 councillors, there are massive financial implications for municipalities. My second comment comes with regard to Section 85, and I tend to agree that this is problematic. However, I don't think the solution is to delete it and then wait for the Demarcation Act to be amended, which will only happen, let's be honest, in the next parliament. It's not going to happen in the fifth parliament. So I don't think the answer is there. I think the answer is to insert a clause that says the Demarcation Act is hereby amended by inserting these into the relevant section of the Demarcation Act. If we're going to do an amendment now, we must then amend both pieces of legislation. You can't take one out and hope that it gets fixed in a year's time. There's got to be a quid pro quo, where if we take it out of this one, we've got to put it into that one. And so I think that if we're going to make that amendment, we must amend the Demarcation Act, that particular section of the Demarcation Act, at the same time.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say, Chair, there are a number of issues that we have noted, and we have also agreed that let's take this one a little bit back so that we can go through it. Let's note for now that MDP is talking about 9 councillors from 9 upwards, isn't it? Not.
No.
Okay. So let's note, because we need to link this presentation together so that we can see the similarities and where we differ, so that we can therefore we can conclude it at a later stage, like the KZN they have done. Maybe for now, let's not engage, Melham. I thought that's what we have agreed upon, Chair. Otherwise, we'd be tempted as well to pinpoint on what we have also noted.
Okay. I think we will request the department. They will put points. I know that the researchers here, they've taken notes, but also because these are written, presentation is very helpful for us. And then because we'll be able then to, when we deal with the clause by clause, we'll be able to address it correctly. Just give you some presentation by department. Professor.
No, thank you very much, Chair. I seem to concur with Honourable Mthethwa. It will not assist us to interrogate them in a piecemeal format. For instance, we never interrogated the KZN presentation. So why is the presentation given by Honourable Mehan assisting us, opening our eyes, but it would be better if we interrogate them in a holistic way. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, so this is routine department. Honorable Kubisa, yes, disturbing me, so it's amazing to give you a platform.
No, I'm German, that is it.
Indona. Oh, Indona.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not sure, we are now checking this presentation because there was a proposal then seconded that now we'll deal with this on another day.
No, I think a presentation by department now. And then after those presentations, we'll comment on some of the areas. And then we'll allow them time. When we are dealing clause by clause, we'll be able to interrogate every presentation in detail. Department.
So has Mr. Mthethwa withdrawn his proposal?
Mthethwa has made a proposal, move on.
And we resolved on it. So then there was a decision that the department won't present today. They would present.
No.
So that's what I'm.
No.
It was a decision from Tutuwe. There's no decision on that. We must not engage them in detail, but allow presentation. They will highlight some of the issues. When we are engaging into details, they will be able available for them if there are issues that we think they must come and clarify.
But really, with the department, we need a thorough briefing and then go through nicely the whole thing. That was the feeling, and well, it's fine with the entity, but for the department, I don't think we'll be doing justice if we...
The department is always available. Allow the department to make general work. They will come again. They are here permanently. The team that is not here permanently is case that the demarcation board is permanently here, the NFARCA is permanently here, Western Cape, I see their presentation here also, they are permanent here. I think also they can be able to move. There's a flight from Joburg from KZN to Cape Town. They will come back and make some presentations. Department, who is assisting us?
Thank you, Captain. Dr. Naidu.
Dr. Naidu. Now we are moving from May 19th to another level.
No, thank you.
But take them at a high level, though.
Yes. Okay, thank you, Chair. It's just a pity that you don't have color copies of the presentation, because the way we've constructed this is that we've delineated the presentation into color coding to assist in identifying the specific issues. So the presentation is going to provide some background, some of the process issues that we've been engaged with. It is separated into a high-level overview of the amendments to the Structures Act. It also has a section where there are section-by-section detailed proposals, which gives you further comment, context as to how we've arrived at the specific amendments. We've also indicated in the presentation who the sponsor of the specific provision is, and then we make some recommendations. So when this bill was being developed, it was mostly amendments that were sponsored by the IEC that featured in the bill. And just to indicate that the IEC provisions were mostly based on their experience that they had around managing and administering municipal elections. Just to give you an idea, so from 2000, or in the first term of local government, for that entire five-year term, we had 60 by-elections. In the second term of local government, we had 54. In the third term of local government, that increased by about 12 to 13 times. We had 741 by-elections. And in this present term, we have already had 164 by-elections to date. So as this process of looking at the amendments continued, the departments, SALGA, provinces, and some municipalities also provided inputs around amendments to the Structures Act. Apart from those inputs that we received, we had also various consultative processes and engagements with various stakeholders to inform the bill that we have. So for the initial bill, which ended up being published for public comment, we had received certification from the Chief State Law Advisor in 2016. We had received pre-certification from DPME around the socio-economic impact assessment study in January of 2016 also. We had gone to the GNA committee in March of that year. And after we had published the bill for comment in May 2016,
SAGA, IEC, MDB have made specific provisions. Mpumalanga and the Western Cape, COPTA have also made inputs, as well as the City of Cape Town, eThekwini, the Richtersveld Municipality, as well as inputs received from ALTA and the University of the Western Cape. So in June of 2016, we had a workshop, and there was a need to expand the comments from the mostly electoral-related amendments to now also focus on other areas. And to discuss those expanded comments, we had a follow-up workshop with stakeholders in November of 2016. We had also taken the amendments to our COPTA Legislative Forum on 15 December of that year. It was further decided that we expand consultation to stakeholders again, and over a two-day period in March of that year, of last year, we had an intensive engagement on the ball. And as you will see in the presentation, all of those stakeholders that participated. So that slide also indicates the processes and time frames that we have followed last year from June to October, where we have received the final CR certification from DPME on the 13th. So the next slide indicates to you three blocks. And unfortunately it's not color-coded, but you would see that the light green deals with electoral-related matters, the other block deals with governance matters, and then the third area that we identified or clustered the amendments related to other matters, which are basically those that related to where reference is made to district management areas, those issues or matters in the bill where we talk about migration. So I'm not going to give you the high level, but go straight to the section by section assessment or overview that we have done, because in that part of the presentation it deals with some of the issues that have been raised by colleagues in the room today. So the first section deals with the definition, the matter relating to declared elected, the definition of DMA being deleted, the definition of election being deleted or substituted, as well as the insertion of the definition of work. Now, on the first matter where we've indicated or included a definition for declared elected, that was done mostly because of the confusion around when a councillor assumed duty. We're now clarifying it to say that the date on which the IEC publishes their results would be considered as the date as to when a councillor is declared elected. The next section 6, which deals with section 6 of the Structures Act and the clause 2 of the bill, deals with DMA, and we provide on the slide there context as to why this reference to DMA is being removed. So during 2000, DMAs were declared by the MDB in terms of section 6 of the Act, and that these were withdrawn by the Demarcation Board in 2008. In terms of Section 21 of the Demarcation Act, the boundaries of municipalities was redetermined then to include DMAs into the areas of local municipalities. And to also indicate why we're removing reference to the DMAs is that in 2013, DMAs were also deleted from the Municipal Property Rights Act, as these provisions were considered obsolete at that time. The provisions 3, 4, and 5 in the bill deals with the matter relating to the types of municipality, and the deletion of those specific provisions, as we've indicated there, is to do away with the plenary charge of the municipality. So the 15 municipalities that has been raised as the minimum, this was actually sponsored by the Northern Cape, and I believe that they will be attending tomorrow to make a presentation on this, Honorable Madam, and to perhaps give you the context behind this as well. Meaning, in essence, there will be a minimum of 8 wards in a municipality. So what we've done is that we've also identified those municipalities, 40 of them, which would fall into this category of the 15 minimum councillors. So the next provision, clause 6, deals with section 12 and the duplicity or the duplicate provisions in the bill. And Othalga has indicated that it should stay, but these provisions were sponsored by KZN together with section 16. And what I've done on that slide is to copy the provision as it stands in the legislation and paste it there just to give you context around what was the intention behind the proposal coming from KZN. So section 20, a deviation in terms of subsection 3 may be no more than 20% if the geographical size of a municipality is greater than 20,000 square kilometers, if less than 35 councillors have been determined for that municipality. So this, as I indicated, came from Northern Cape. And if you look at the next slide, right, there would be 9 municipalities in the country where their areas are between 20,000 and 44,000 square kilometers. So if you look at David Craper, the largest municipality in terms of geographic extent in the country, 44,000 square kilometers, they presently have 31 councillors. If this provision as proposed is accepted, the new number of councillors in that municipality would be 37, so an increase from 31 to 36 councillors, and an increase of wards from 16 to 19 wards in that municipality. So just to give you also an idea of the size of David Craper, the city of Johannesburg would fit 27 times into that municipality. Gauteng would fit almost 2.5 times into the Albert Kaiser municipality. So these 9 municipalities fall into that category. And to also then deal with the financial implications linked with this deviation or the proposed amendment. So if we look at David Craper, right, so it is presently a grade 4 municipality, and it would have 6 additional part-time councillors. And you would also know that in terms of councillor remuneration being subsidized from the National Treasury, grades 1, grades 2, and grade 3 municipalities receive a subsidy from the National Treasury in the form of 90%, 80%, and 70% of the remuneration of part-time councillors. So if we look at Joe Morolong in the Northern Cape municipality, presently has 29 councillors. If the proposal is accepted, it would have 34 councillors, an additional of 5 part-time councillors. Those 5 additional part-time councillors would be subsidized by 90% by the National Treasury. The same would go for Beaufort West, which is a grade 2 municipality, and they would be subsidized to the extent of 80%. In terms of the minimum of 15 councillors, so these 40 municipalities indicated in the subsequent slides fall into that category, and they range from Karoo, Hoogland in the Northern Cape to Nkambatini, which I think is in the KZN province. So these would be the affected municipalities. There are 14 municipalities in the country that presently have 7, one that has 8, four that has nine, and then the rest as indicated in the slides that follow there. Then the next section deals with qualifications for counselors and the 2-year cooling off period as was proposed by KwaZulu-Natal. The clause 10 in the bill deals with the counselor being deemed to assume office, and this is linked to the definition that we provided up front. The definition of declared elected. Clause 11 in the bill talks to the election of and appointment of district council, and this is an amendment which cross-references to the removal of reference to DMA. Clause 12 deals with by-elections, and these were sponsored by the IEC, save for the provision relating to the MEC, in consultation with the minister, decides that a by-election must stand over until the next election of all municipal councils. That has come from the department. I am joined here by Mr. Granville from the IEC, who could speak to those provisions where they are relating to the elections. I don't know if you want to come in here and say something.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and the members. On this specific provision, I think what we're doing here is just formalizing the current practice. Since 2000, we've only had one case, and that was the very first one where a municipal manager proclaimed an election. There were two other attempts, and the circumstances around that was not was a bit suspicious. The reason why we have the practice is that once a municipal manager proclaims the election, and within this period of 14 days, then the voters roll for that election closes. Now, this does not give us sufficient time, and therefore we also lean on the other provision which says that if a municipal manager does not proclaim the election, then that responsibility falls onto the MEC, and the MEC then proclaims in consultation with the IEC, and there's no time for that timeline attached to that. So what this allows us is to give us sufficient time to plan with the MEC a date to in order to allow us to provide for all the activities that is required in the by-election. And by-elections nowadays is not just characterized by a simple ward. Of late, we've also have dissolved councils, and just imagine having a dissolved council and having to proclaim an election within 14 days, specifically with the added responsibility that we have to the Constitutional Court to also obtain addresses and all of that. So the provision is basically just to formalize the current practice and arrangement that we have with municipal managers and MECs.
Okay, so the next provision is 13 in the bill, and that deals with the migration of the Code of Conduct from the Systems Act to the Structures Act, MVS. The Code of Conduct was originally in the Structures Act, but because of the Structures Act dealing with councillor issues, it felt that within the scheme of the Structures Act, it would be appropriate for the Code of Conduct to feature in the Structures Act again. And then this section also deals with the authorized representative, where cross-reference is made to this definition in the Municipal Electoral Act. Clause 14 in the bill deals with the meetings of municipal councils. And then when an MEC requests or designate the person to call a meeting when the speaker or acting speaker refuses to do so. And this was sponsored by KwaZulu-Natal. Section 29 for notice of meetings, where we felt that this section fits good in the scheme of things around the specific provisions in the Act as they stand. Clause 16 talks to quorums and decisions, and we now clarify that the quorum for a meeting is the number as determined by the MEC for that municipality in terms of Section 12 of the Structures Act. This clause also deals with the reading in of the words flowing from the Constitutional Court matter around the vote of a presiding officer in a municipality, when it deals with those specific provisions in Section 164 of the Constitution. Clause 17 deals with the election of speakers, and this is linked to the plenary type of municipality. Clause 18 deals with the function of speakers, and sponsored by SALDA, this is intended to strengthen the role of speakers in council. Clause 19, also sponsored by the department together with SALDA, around the provision of whip of council in municipalities. Clause 20 of the bill deals with the composition of EXCOs, and the proposal that we have a uniform formula now that is applicable throughout the country when an executive committee is determined. This was in the main sponsored by KZN. Clause 21 deals with the functions and powers of EXCOs, as sponsored by SALDA, together with the next clause dealing with the functions and powers of executive mayors. Section 73, establishment of ward committees, we say that this should be done within 120 days, unless if there's extenuating circumstances where this would not be possible, as was the case in Ward 2 in the last local government elections. And we note also the input made from SALDA around possible amendment to that proposal. Section 79 deals with the establishment of an oversight committee. This was jointly sponsored by the department, provinces, and SALDA. And this is in the main to strengthen oversight and governance in municipalities. Section 81 deals with participation in municipal councils by traditional leaders, and this is to neaten the provision, or to clarify that the code of conduct is no longer in the Systems Act but rather in the Structures Act. The bill presently deals with sections 85, 3 and 4 and the migration thereof to the Demarcation Act, and we're saying that this should be retained in the Act until there is the demarcation bill that is being considered, where that migration can be done through that. Clause 27 deals with DMA, and the section we are proposing in the bill to be repealed. Provision clause 28 deals with general amendments, which is basically talking to the, or making reference to the plenary type of municipality. Clause 29 deals with excessive seats, and Mr. Abraham.
With regard to clause 29, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, we have had scenarios since 2000, so that's four general elections, and also one dissolved council, and if you look at the amount of municipalities that you have in excess of 200, it's about a 3 in 900 occurrence, where applying the seat allocation formula, that the amount of seats that is derived at exceeds the amount of seats that has been determined by the MEC in terms of the formula. What we have done and what we are proposing here is to deal with a party who obtains what we call an excessive seat in the same way that we deal with an independent. Currently in the formula, when independent wins a seat, that seat and those votes are removed from the formula to allocate the distribution of the remaining seats. So what we are saying, without getting involved in a mathematical explanation of the formula, is that where a party, or where the, not a party, where the calculation results in an excessive seat, and that party who has obtained the excessive seat, and I'll explain more as to how we get to that, that we remove that party and the seats that it has achieved from the formula, and we then distribute the remaining seats amongst the remaining parties. So how does an excessive seat come about? We have councillors are either elected, are either ward-based, which is first past the post, or alternatively they are peer councillors. But what many of us don't understand, and it's quite understandable as well, because we call them PR councillors, but the PR councillor is actually determined after a total proportional allocation is calculated for a party, and then we deduct the ward councillors that have achieved, and what remains is proportional. So it's not outright proportional. So let's say that we do the overall calculation of proportionality, taking total votes divided by the number of seats, and a party is eligible for 5 seats. However, they want 6 wards. So the overall allocation they had to receive was 5, but they've already won 6 wards. So they have one more than what they should be entitled overall. So that presents us with a dilemma, in that they now have more seats than what they would be eligible for. What we then do is, because we cannot take away the ward seat, which is first past the post, we then remove those seats as well as all the votes that that party got, and then distribute amongst the remaining parties whatever seat remains with their votes. This has happened in Metsimaholo. In the dissolved council that we had in, I know it's a bit difficult to wrap our heads around, but I think the biggest challenge here is in understanding that a PR councillor is not determined by a PR ballot. The PR councillor is determined by total votes, which would determine a proportional allocation per party, and then deduct whatever ward seats they got, and what remains, that is PR. So this is a bit of a conundrum, and just to ensure that we have the protection in terms of the legislation with regard to this, we are proposing to formalize that arrangement, because we do the exact same calculation, or we deal with it in the exact same way that we deal with an independent. If an independent wins a ward, we take his ward seat out of the calculation, and also all of his votes, because he's won a ward. I am available to give through your chair a detailed explanation. If members want to see an example of the calculation of seat allocation, there is one on our website which explains exactly what I've done now in terms of figures and spreadsheets.
I would appreciate that.
Okay.
good time for this
conversation. Okay, are you through with presentation?
Clause 29?
No.
Yes. Okay. There was, with regard to party list, a party, it is possible for a party, specifically parties who just give one member, or alternatively, if they win more seats than what they've expected. Currently, the legislation allows for them 2 days to supplement the list. In fact, we are asking for 2 days. And the reason for this is that in order for us to publish the list of councillors so that municipalities can have the first council meeting, we need to finalize these names. So we're putting a time limit to that to say that within 2 days, they must supplement the list so that we can elect members to those seats. Schedule 1, this is paragraph 29, Schedule 1 deals with the filling of vacancies. The current provision is that a municipal manager must inform us of a vacancy within 14 days. In fact, currently it says within 7 days. Practically, we've experienced that this may not be possible, specifically in the event if a councillor has passed on, that obtaining the necessary documentation to support the vacancy, such as the death certificate, you normally want to give the family sometimes a grief, and also just to get the certificate. You don't want to administration to be so insensitive. Then in terms of 18.1c, the proposal is to amend that to say that if the municipal manager does not inform us, currently it's only the municipal manager that informs us, and the distinction that I'm drawing here is in terms of informing us and proclaiming. In terms of informing us, earlier on we mentioned that in the Act that the municipal manager must inform the MEC as well as the IEC. So in a case where a municipal manager does not inform us, then we are asking or proposing that the MEC must in fact do so. Because only once we are informed of a vacancy, then we can then begin with the administration or preparations for an election. Item 20, which is the provision 29, deals with the changing, amending the list. And I think we had KZN earlier, my colleague from KZN earlier, saying that, and mentioning the example of Nutu, saying that this they don't support this, but by the very same token, I think that Nutu was actually made possible because of the fact that the amendment is not in place. If the amendment had been in place, and this is what we're saying, is that on certification of candidate list, it cannot be certification if it means nothing. Certification of candidate list is what informs the electorate to say this is a list of candidates that the political party is presenting you to you. If we allow the process to continue, it is possible, in the worst case scenario, that the list may that takes office may be totally different to what the electorate has voted for. That's just from a democracy point of view. From a practical point of view, and this normally happens after the results, if parties are allowed to still change their list, then there's a mad rush, and it creates for the IEC a dilemma who has to get this list of councillors out. Municipalities want the list, they want the meeting, but all of this administration just adds a burdensome task on us and delays the processes. With this in place, we are saying that those who are eligible for a seat off the list, that they must take up the seat, and effectively the only way that you can then get a replacement is through a vacancy, which means the councillor would either have to resign or for some other reason be replaced. But this we also undertake can happen within the necessary times, not to interfere or obstruct council meetings. It's just that if it's allowed to happen before we publish the results, then it will just extend this period of finalizing the list of councillors for a municipality. Once again, we are proposing a time limit. In terms of Schedule 2, there are multiple seats. Then we are asking that the party must inform us within 2 days to inform us how they elect to fill those seats, because a candidate cannot take up more than one seat, obviously. Schedule 2, basically, we've covered a lot of the provisions with regard to list and maintenance and how to fill vacancies in Schedule 1. And Schedule 2 basically just duplicates that, because Schedule 1 deals with Category A and Category B local councils, and Schedule 2 deals with district councils. So the first one in provision, what's that, 30? We are once again with regard to the supplementing and changing of lists that I've spoken to. Then we're also removing the, just to be consistent with the previous definition and deletion of DMAs in items 14 and 15. And item 23 and 24 basically just repeats what we have said under Schedule 1. Back to you, Dr. Naidu.
Thank you, Mr. Abrams. So, Clause 31 provides for the inclusion in the schedule now of WIP as an office bearer. This was not there previously. Clause 32 then deals with the migration of the Code of Conduct from the Systems Act to the Structures Act. And as you will see at the bottom of that slide, the Structures Act presently provides for council, the composition, membership, operation and dissolution of council, as well as internal structures and functionary, which deals all with councillor related matters. The next provision, 33, repeal of laws, and it indicates which section in the Systems Act is being repealed, and then the short title and commencement of the Act is indicated on the next slide. And then as part of our recommendation, we're saying that the committee notes the proposed amendments to the Structures Act, and then to discuss the proposed amendments with a view to taking the bill further. Chairperson, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you very much, Doctor, for the presentation. It's very helpful because then when we are dealing with clause by clause, we have sufficient information. And also the presentation by Salka, surely Councillor Stofield have been in touch with the department. We're trying to persuade them to take some of your proposals. I think some of them are captured, some are not. Surely we have to persuade the committee to look at it. And also I think the case that then, I think was mentioned, that themselves have been making this, sponsoring some proposals. Some of them are captured already in the main proposed amendment. And then we are going to work systematically. And what we are going to do then, when we are doing the bill, will be clause by clause, will be able then to see the amendment that are proposed by other colleagues. Wherever possible, they will send one person to be around as Councillor Stofield. I think we'll have one person. Maybe we have a rep here just to attend also to see things move and see what is the proposal, what are not proposal. And then the bigger issue is the allocation of seats, Honorable Mteto. There has been a problem in general allocation of seats. I think there's complete misunderstanding in the country about how seats are allocated. And then we can't have a bill that can't clarify that for even if innocent, it's not just anyway. People who are like me, somewhere in Alexander, who got no clue. I've seen many professors themselves cannot calculate it for you. Because it seems is a miss somewhere for department, belong to the department only, that they know how to calculate this thing. I think it's a problem. We must have a thorough discussion. I think we must make presentation. I know the Nelson Mandela one was a big issue. Mm. Was a big issue because people got no understanding how these things are calculated. I win thousands of awards, but I got PR is almost zero. The more I win awards, the more I lose PR. And then the people take as simple as that. Of course, it's very calculated. And there is something that we must work it out very systematically. And the members of parliament themselves here, even when they debate it in the chamber, if you are able to explain this one very well, then we won't have problem about this, because I know many parties already have changed this thing. Look at this formula. Maybe the wrong formula, or not wrong, that we don't understand. Because people say, no, man, I can't win 30 awards, but I don't have anything then this way. Because they confuse the two, the popular vote and the constituency vote, and they confuse the two. Unless we are able to clarify it in a manner that assists us, then I think we'll do that as we deal it clause by clause. I think Honorable Ted was raising this issue that we must consider. Yeah.
We will consider, Chair, and the formula we would like to see. But just for clarity purposes, not discussing the whole document. Is this practical, Chair, that the municipality manager, sometimes they don't inform about the vacancies?
It does.
Oh, okay. If it does, Chair, then I now understand why the clause is here. And also, I just want to check, Chair, the latest presentation that has been presented by the entities, is it captured in this? If not, we will request that the department must also include those so that we can debate it within the same package that they have presented. I can see the IEC is here. I'm not sure. I've got it everything all today. Whether the other presentation are also captured here in the spirit that they put in. So that when we debate it within the department, we must know where are the differences, what are we agreeing upon, how to take it forward, if it must be deleted, why. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, I just want clarity from you as to what the process is going forward.
A process?
Yes, Chair. So I understand that tomorrow we set aside the whole day to discuss this. Is that now being cancelled? I see Shireen shaking her head.
No, tomorrow Western Cape is still coming, then we'll have sufficient time for us to have a discussion.
That's fine, Chair. My question is, the department will still be here for us to
absolutely
cross
absolutely
question some of the issues here. I don't want to say cross examine, but to interrogate and
to clarify your mind.
Yes.
Okay. That is going to happen tomorrow. Western Cape is going to make presentation, and then Western Cape is here in terms of their presentation, but they'll make it tomorrow, and we'll have a discussion, then detailed discussion. And then we can see there are not, but Osaka issues are here, and also KZN issues here. General, we can work it out in that way tomorrow. It's a little bit a longer day, though. Members must know that we started early at 10. And we know that Tuesdays we start at 11, because parties, they want to have time to fly wherever they are. That's why I choose the 11, unless we apply for permission to start at 9. We wanted to allow people who, because their connecting flights sometimes are late, for whatever reason, unable to be here on time. That's why then we have agreed that we start on 11 on Tuesday. It's a temporary arrangement anyway, it's not a permanent arrangement that we are going to have. That's how it's going to work tomorrow. Department is here with us. SAGA, they do have people who represent them around here. And then KZN, I think, is represented. SAGA is here, then we'll have that. But we do have the input now. But it seems the department, they're drafting the amendment. They also took some of your input. There will be other input that they should highlight. This was SAGA, this was the issue. When we discuss, we know exactly what was the position for this and that and that. I think it will be easy for, I think, what Tim Tepper is proposing. Then you can see and how you can capture them. You may find that we agree with them or not. The bigger issue will be the issue of dealing with the finality of the formula. I think it's very important. I just know that many political parties are not happy with this. For whatever reason, maybe don't understand it. And then the more we explain it, the more everyone understands, then there's legitimacy. And people accept this thing. We understand, many of us who are here, but not understood by many people. Even at the leadership level, general, all general secretary of organization must understand this far better than us. But we can see that there are problems of how seats are allocated. Then it causes a lot of trouble. Okay.
Sorry, just a quick one. Tomorrow, could we get the state law advisor or the parliamentary law advisor to advise us on the tagging? Because I'm very concerned about the fact that it's been tagged 75 instead of 76, given that this affects section 1953, I think it is, of the Constitution. So if we could get some advice from the parliamentary state law advisor.
Tomorrow surely there should be one should be around. State advisor, I think there will be maybe around also. We can then have some discussion on this tomorrow. Councillor Stofield and colleagues from KZN, if you happen to be around town, you will be free also to attend. But otherwise, those who represent you around parliamentary precincts will attend on your behalf. And then we already have your presentation. And a very helpful presentation, really, because now we can be able to take it forward. Okay, then we're proposing that they will have a signed one sent to us, just to ensure that we are sure. We need to do that and to ensure that we work it that way. And we will have then a meeting tomorrow, have a discussion on that. But for the purposes of us now is to finalize our initiation. We have to adopt it because it's a very urgent matter for all of us. Colleagues, thank you very much for your attendance. Thank you for presentation. Tomorrow then we will be dealing with it in detail. Whoever comes in tomorrow must be prepared to engage with us on what are the issues. Councillor Stofield, whoever is here also on SAGA side, will be around also as a discussion.